Good afternoon. It's 3 o'clock and it's my pleasure to call this meeting to order. Pat assures me that we actually have a quorum. So with that, if I could have a motion to adopt today's agenda. So moved. Second, that was Bohannon, second. All right, all in favor? Opposed? Great. May I now have an a motion to approve the March 1st, 2023 minutes. We have a motion, a second. Falcoff, I thought you were going to burst into song there for a second. Please feel free, Dean Castle, but while he's warming up his vocal cords, all in favor? Any opposed? Great. Do we have any requests for public comment this afternoon?
Not today.
All right. Well, in that case, we're going to move to agenda Roman numeral five, or actually six, which are the president's comments. And I have a presentation to give later today, so I'm going to keep my comments very brief. But I want to say I hope everyone is enjoying the arrival of spring. I think March is supposed to either come in like a lamb or go out like a lamb, but we have not experienced that this year. So I hope with the challenging weather we've been having that everybody's houses and pets and families and trees are all safe. Good wishes for all of the holidays people may be celebrating now, Ramadan, Passover, Easter, other festivals of spring. It's been a very busy time at the university, and I think all of you know from all of the appointments that have been populating your calendars that we're searching for new Huskies in a number of leadership roles. I want to say thank you to everyone who's been attending the open forums and the private meetings and making their thoughts about new leadership opportunities and new candidates known to us. And I just want to say very briefly, I think that we've had a very high quality pools of candidates for all of the positions we've been searching for, and they're all moving forward quickly and positively. I'm going to give like the 2-second overview, and then I'll just ask if anybody has questions about a particular search at the university level or in academic affairs. But the Board of Trustees on Monday approved the appointment of our new dean of the College of Health and Human Sciences. We had the last dean candidate for the College of Engineering and Engineering Technology in this week, and I know the search committee is meeting, and that will also be moving forward. We are about halfway through two of four candidates in the Vice President for Research and Innovation Partnerships search. And we have been interviewing at the semi-finalist Zoom interview level candidates for our next chief HR officer. And the pool is building and building in a very positive fashion from what I understand, although I haven't seen any of the resumes for our vice president for DEI and chief diversity officer. So there's a lot going on, but it's all moving forward. And with that, I'll just pause and say, does anyone have questions about searches in progress before we move on to the next item? All right. Again, thank you for showing up, but also just thank you for representing the university positively. In all of the searches that I've just mentioned, Provost Ingram and I have heard repeatedly from the candidates a lot of respect for the sense of community at this institution. Their observations that we are a values-driven institution and eagerness to join us because of the students that we serve and the values that we share. With that, I'm going to move on to Roman numeral item seven. 7A is a presentation from the athletic board. And Ishmael, do you want to introduce this presentation, or should we just let Courtney and Courtney go?
The only thing I would add is that, you know, this is part and parcel of the effort to make University Council a venue, a tool to share information with this body and also receive feedback from the body. So with that, it's our pleasure to welcome the two Courtneys today with us, Courtney Hill and Courtney Vincent, who are going to share an overview presentation. I believe they will take, comment questions after the presentation. So without further ado, please, the floor is all yours.
Ishmael, thanks, President Freeman. So my name is Courtney Hughes, and I'm an associate professor of public health and the faculty athletics representative here at NIU. And in that role, I help ensure the academic integrity of our athletics program and serve as a liaison between our institution, athletics, and monitor the student athlete experience. So I'm joined here today by Courtney Vincent, who is a senior associate athletic director, sports administrator, and a senior woman administrator. So we'll start off. Oh, I have the clicker. Just going through some of the work we do at the athletic board and then leave some time for questions if you have any. So to give an overview, the athletic board reports directly to President Freeman, and it's comprised of a number of individuals around campus. So there's faculty from all of the colleges on campus, there's student athletes on the board. There's also students who are not student athletes on the board. We have representatives from Alumni Association, NIU Foundation, staff, athletic director, and all of these individuals are appointed for 3-year staggered terms, except for the students who are on it for 1-year appointed terms. And then within also as the faculty athletics representative or the FAR, I serve as the chair of that board. So our focus really is to focus on policies that relate to athletics here at the university. And one of our charges is to ensure equity between men and women's athletics. And then also we have various working groups. So we have the diversity, equity, inclusion, and belonging group. We have finance and facilities, and then we have external affairs. So one of the areas we focus on really in every meeting is the performance academically for student athletes. And overall, I just want to point out that we do really well here. So as of fall of 22, our average GPA of student athletes was 3.3, and 14 of our 16 teams last year had a 3.0 or higher. Around 60 students or so each semester achieve a 4.0, they're student athletes. And then at the conference level, so we're in the MAC conference, there's 12 schools in the conference, and each week of the year, the conference designates a student athlete of the week for males and females. And so far, just this academic year, we've won that 6 times. And I was looking at the records for that, and we're tied for 2nd place among the 12 schools in the MAC. So we're doing well at a conference level from a student athlete experience perspective. And then for the last athletic board meeting, we looked, zeroed in on like majors that the student athletes are focusing on. So across NIU, we have 69 different majors that our student athletes have declared. And, so there's a wide variety. You can see some of the top majors: kinesiology, sport management, business administration, communications, health sciences. And this is pretty typical for student athletes. We also looked at data from the NCAA Division I schools across the nation. And the breakdown, they had like 10 categories. And the breakdown for their majors really mirrored the breakdown that we have at NIU, not just among these 5, but across majors. So there's really no red flags, and I take that as a good thing that we're kind of on par with how other Division I schools are doing in that department. So at the athletic board, we think about areas that we need improvement and talk about those. We also celebrate the wins. So I wanted to highlight a couple here. We had a wrestler this year who was a MAC champion, Isaac Olenek. He was also an All-American, and so that's a big accomplishment. We had Khadija Campbell, who is a 2023 MAC Outstanding Performer, that's indoor track. And then two at a team level, last year you were probably aware of this, but our football team won the MAC championship, so that's great. We also had our men's soccer team. We won the MAC championship, we won the regular season MAC, and then also got to the 2nd round of the NCAA tournament. So we have teams that are really performing well. Just this last athletic board meeting, we had Sandra Paris, who's our new head volleyball coach, come to the meeting, and she was introduced to to the board, and Courtney and I were both on the search committee for that position. And she's really hit the ground running as she started, but it was just nice to see so many great, highly qualified candidates who wanted to come here via NIU and coach at NIU, kind of to President Freeman's point earlier that she made. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Courtney Henson.
All right, so a part of some of the work that we do in the athletics department is similar to what we do on campus. We have a focus on diversity, equity, and inclusion and belonging. And NIU is the first institution to win the NCAA MOA Award for Diversity and Inclusion. We won it in 2016, and we also won it in 2022. As a part of our DEIB program, we decided to do something unique this year with the help of Bernice. But NIU, the ADEI, Student Affairs and the Alumni Association sponsored 18 students to go to Tulsa to view the Black Wall Street tour, to go on the Black Wall Street tour. The 18 students were regular NIU students. We were playing a football game in Tulsa, so it just made sense to combine those units to provide that experience. The awesome thing about that was it was something that President Freeman was with us, and other VPs joined us as well, as along with alumni and different people within the department and the university. So it was just a really awesome experience to have for our students. And it's something that we're going to look to grow as we have some other football games in other cities. We also celebrated Title IX this year. We had the 50th anniversary of Title IX. We had our brunch in October 22 when we essentially honored our 50 best student athletes that were female. And we had this brunch where we were able to honor them, but we also was able to have a panel discussion. And in the panel discussion, we had people that were administrators at NIU in that 1972-ish area to now. It was student athletes, it was administrators, there were coaches on there. And we were able to see the evolution of Title IX and how it grew at NIU during that time span. And now, the focus in which the NCAA is taken is on health and wellness and the overall student athlete experience. Very similar to campus, our student athletes are experiencing mental health issues and concerns. And that is something that has come up quite a bit from the NCAA level. So we are looking at different ways to support mental health from an association and how we can bring that to our campuses, making sure that our student athletes are healthy and able to perform from a physical health standpoint, but also, this is a unique time. I was a student athlete back yonder, but it's an interesting time in that our student athlete voice is really important. I don't know that I was asked that much about my opinions when I was a student athlete, but now our student athletes are dictating what they want their experience to be. And the positive in that is that we are able to be flexible and be amenable to some of those things, to a lot of those things, to be honest. And the other part is just making sure that we're actually preparing our student athletes for graduation and for life after their student athlete experience. So we are looking into different programming and different experiences in which we can provide a full college experience for our student athletes so they can be productive citizens in society after graduation.
Questions?
Thank you again, and unless if there are any other questions or comments. Are there any questions or comments? Sure.
So kind of do the
microphone. Mm-hmm. Doing your job.
Thank you.
Just a comment. I'm kind of new to NIU, right? But how much I appreciate the student athlete experience and the work that you do to ensure their safety, both mental health and physical health. And so, you know, if there's ever anything I can do, you know, please don't hesitate to reach out to me to that. I think athletics is a really important part of the university experience for our students and for our faculty and staff. So it builds community and a sense of belonging. So I just thank you for that.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, maybe I would also like to chime in with a question, but a little bit dumb. So forgive me, being a faculty, I should know better. For Courtney Vincent, I mean, I get a sense when you spoke, like you referenced student athlete, like students on campus. So, I mean, as a faculty, you know, I deal with student athlete time to time. So I'm just wondering, I mean, how different are they from other students on campus?
They're not entirely, like, it's not a huge difference. The biggest difference, honestly, is schedules. Because of the amount of time that our student athletes practice and add the part when you're talking about competition, which involves travel. Those are the biggest differences. But in terms of what they're experiencing from a mental health standpoint, they're for the most part pretty similar. Just add like competition anxiety.
You have more time? Any questions, other questions, comment? Well, seeing none, please join me in thanking the two Courtneys for full swing with us. Okay, so we will move now to agenda item 7B, which will feature a budget update from NIU President Dr. Lisa Freeman and NIU Vice President of Administration and Finance, Chief Financial Officer, George Middlemiss. So without further ado, I would like to turn the floor to Dr. Freeman and George Middlemiss.
Great, and Pat, can you advance the slides for me? And there'll be one point where I may ask you to click on a hyperlink. Okay, thank you. So if we could move on to the next slide. What I want to go over with the University Council today is budget updates kind of in two different contexts. One, I want to talk about what's going on in Springfield and the state of Illinois relative to the appropriations process and also the activity of the Commission on Equitable Public University Funding that's been doing its work this session and whose work will end at the end of this session. And then obviously I want to talk about what's most important to us, Northern Illinois University. And I'm going to do most of the formal presentation, doing a summary of our progress on University Goal 6A, showing you the new landing page on the president's website where you can go to look for information about resource development and fiscal responsibility. And then in addition to my co-presenter and co-conspirator, which is, I mean, in the nicest way, Vice President George Middlemiss, I'm going to ask the provost to comment as well as the members of the budget and planning work group whose report is now public on the president's website to just reflect a little bit on where we are and where we're going and then open it up to UC for comments. And if we could have the next slide, I think the next slide is just a spacer to say that I'm going to start talking about what's going on in the state of Illinois. As those of you who've been around for a long time know, there's just a series of steps that happens every spring as part of the appropriations process for the university. If I could have the next slide. And it starts with budget recommendations for higher ed from the Illinois Board of Higher Education. And those typically happen at their January board meeting ahead of the governor's budget address, which generally occurs in February. So this year, the IBHE recommendations were advanced on January 19th. They recommended a 7.5% increase in appropriated operating funds for public universities. They recommended that those be distributed the way the funding that they shared for COVID relief was distributed, using an equity lens. And the equity lens that they recommended was distribution based on how many Pell eligible students are at each public university. And because about half of our students are low income Pell eligible, for us, the equitable distribution, the equity lens distribution would have been actually 11.5% increase to us. There are some universities that would have gotten less than 7.5% to enable us to get more than 7.5%. The IBHE recommended a $50 million increase to MAP and continuation of the AIM High grants with funding maintained at the current level of $35 million. And AIM High is what is the foundation for our Husky Pledge, our scholarship program that allows students who come from families with median income of $75,000 or less not to pay tuition and fees. AIM High provides the last dollar to allow that program to go forward. We also have some other AIM High programs focused on transfer students. It's been really important to our enrollment management efforts. It was authorized as a pilot 3 years ago, and so recommending that the pilot be continued and hopefully institutionalized was something we were very pleased to see. The governor gave his budget address on February 15th. He recommended a 7% increase for public universities, which is the largest increase in operating funds proposed in more than two decades. So both the IBHE and the governor's increase were very welcome. The governor, because he's really interested in making college education as accessible and affordable as possible to all Illinoisans, actually recommended a $100 million increase in MAP, twice what the IBHE recommended. And this will have significant impact on our students, half of which are MAP eligible, 48.8%. So just about half of which are MAP eligible. And the governor also recommended continuation of AIM High with the funding maintained at the current level. The legislature is scheduled to adjourn on May 19th this year. And so between the governor's budget and the adjournment of the legislature, our job, as the leadership of the universities in the state, the leadership of higher education in the state, is to advocate for the budget proposals that we support. If I could have the next slide, Pat. And so I think for reasons that you will all understand, NIU enthusiastically supports the governor's higher ed budget proposal. And the statement that's on the slide in front of you is a statement I put out the day of the governor's budget address, and we shared that immediately with not only the university community, but also the governor's office and the media. This is a budget that is better than one that we've seen for a long time. And it reflects the belief of the current administration that higher education is an investment in economic prosperity and social mobility and in good things for our state. And then the other part of the governor's budget that wasn't new, but that recurred, if I could have the next slide too, is the Rebuild Illinois program. And so Rebuild Illinois supports construction initiatives and critical infrastructure projects, which are essentially repairs and renovations. And I don't think I have to tell anyone who works on this campus that this capital funding isn't badly. I mean, we need this capital funding to address life and safety issues, the deferred maintenance backlog. Almost 80% of our buildings are 50 years older or more, and they've been neglected as a result of the budget impasse and underinvestment historically from the state. And so the continued appropriation of funding to Rebuild Illinois is very important for us. And in addition to all the things that need to be fixed, like building envelopes and roofs, we have two new building projects that are moving forward in the design phase or later, and we expect to have cranes on campus for our new health technology center and for the Northern Illinois Center for Community Sustainability, and this is very exciting. So how do we advocate? What do we do? If I could have the next slide. I already showed you that the day of the governor's budget, we issued a statement supporting his budget. And you may ask why we supported his budget and we didn't go out and say, well, we want the governor's budget, but we really thought the IBHE did a better job with appropriations. And the truth is, when IBHE gives you 7.5 and the governor gives you 7, you say thank you. And advocating for an equity lens this year probably isn't the best use of our advocacy time and energy and effort, because the public commission that I'm going to talk about in a minute is going to come out with a formula, and we're probably just as well to wait for that and be super excited. So what does advocacy look like beyond issuing a statement? Every year, the leadership of this university testifies in front of both the House and the Senate Higher Ed Appropriations Committee. This year in Springfield, because we have such a Democratic General Assembly as the result of redistricting, the leadership have asked the higher ed committees to have bipartisan leadership. And I can say that when we testified, as always, we got asked questions about what was going on campus and how we were investing in our students. But really, it was really pretty friendly. And there was bipartisan support for the higher education portion of the budget. Another thing you'll note on this slide is that we were able to coordinate our Senate appropriations hearing on March 22nd with NIU's Alumni Association's Advocacy Day in Springfield. So on the day before our hearings, whether it's House or Senate, George and I and Katie Davison, our state relations person, and Matt Streb, we go down and we visit the offices of all of the members who are on the Appropriations Committee, as well as the leadership of the House and Senate, to let them know about the great things that are going on at NIU, to find out if there are any particular points they want us to address in testimony or on that day. Before we get invited to testify, we are required to turn into the state of Illinois a very large notebook of forms. It's like hundreds of pages of answers to questions, and sometimes our answers to those questions raise questions and we're there to address them. But it was just really nice to see students and alumni and leadership. We had a lot of deans there in red and black going office to office, just saying NIU is an institution that makes a difference in the lives of our students. That's, you know, something that we're proud of. And it was very, very fun to be down there. And you don't often think testimony is fun, but it was fun. Conversations are going on to advocate for investment in higher ed and equitable investment in higher ed. The Partnership for College Completion, which is noted on this slide as CCC, is hosting community conversations across the state of Illinois, featuring panels of members of advocacy groups, students from higher ed, and then higher ed leaders. I did one in Rockford last week on March 30th. Kiana Graves, one of our students, was also on the panel, and so was President Glassman from Eastern Illinois University, and then some people from Rockford Promise and Rock Valley College. And again, it was a nice way to just let the general public know about what's going on in Springfield, the history of funding in Illinois, the importance of investing in higher education, and it was a very positive vibe in the room. I am serving currently as the convener of the presidents and chancellors, and so on their behalf, we've been trying to get an editorial published to express our support and thanks for the governor's budget. I can tell you it's been hard to get it into the Chicago media, possibly because of the mayoral election that was going on simultaneously, but we've now submitted the editorial to the Register Journal, which is a statewide paper, and we're waiting to see if that will be published. And then I think those of you who got up and read the newspaper beyond election results this morning saw that Governor Pritzker was actually on campus yesterday, along with our state senator, our current and immediate past state representatives. We had an amazing student also testify yesterday, a MAP recipient, and I think we got relatively good coverage for the event. So the short thing is, we're doing our jobs. We're doing everything that we can do as leadership. I'm working closely with my colleague presidents to talk about the higher ed budget. There really isn't a lot of pushback or controversy about the higher ed budget, but you know, higher ed is only a small portion of the governor's budget. So while there's bipartisan support for our piece of the budget, it's not over till it's over. And we don't want to see anything happen to the proposal in the wee hours between now and when the legislature adjourns. So we're just going to keep on doing what we're doing. I do want to say that when you look at the picture on this slide, you can see Speaker Welch with me and also with our student, a different student than the one who testified yesterday. This is Rebecca Gonzalez. She went down with us to Springfield to testify in front of the Senate. And Speaker Welch was so impressed with her that when I first went into his office, Rebecca was in another office. And I said to him, I hope you tune into the testimony tomorrow to hear her speak, because her story is compelling and it's quintessential NIU. And he said, well, bring her back. Go find her and bring her back. And so I thought that alone was really lovely. He's the Speaker of the House. He's very busy. We went and got Rebecca. And I really thought we were going to walk into the office, maybe not even get all the way in the office. He was going to come and do a selfie with her. He was going to shake her hand and we'd be moved on it. And that would be incredibly gracious. He called her into the office. He asked her to tell him about her. And then he gave her a challenge coin. And he gave her a special commemorative pin that he had made when he became the first African-American Speaker of the House. And he told her to keep those with her and to keep him posted on her progress as she took her first job as a medical lab tech in Rockford. And it was just really a very special experience. And so, you know, as Courtney said, our student voices are very important. And Beth and George and I and Matt and Katie can talk and talk and talk and talk, but it's the students that we serve who tell our story the best. And that works in Springfield, even with all the cynical people who are in Springfield sometimes. All right, switching gears a little bit, still in the state portion, if I could have the next slide. The Illinois Commission on Equitable Public University Funding was established by Senate Bill 815 in 2021. And you can see the goal, which this is language right out of the statute. It's supposed to establish specific data-driven criteria and approaches to the General Assembly adequately, equitably, and stably funding public universities in this state, and then to evaluate the existing funding methods. This was born just as we completed Thriving Illinois, the strategic plan for higher ed in Illinois. There was much discussion in making that plan about how to equitably, adequately, predictably, and stably fund universities. And given the history of the budget impasse, I don't think it's surprising that anybody wanted all of those things emphasized. But also, we are dealing with a funding formula in this state that is historic and has no rational basis. So every year, the formula used to appropriate funds is the one that was essentially used the year before with an increment up or down, but no one can explain what the formula is based upon. And so there is a desire to have a rational funding formula for the universities. There is also, as you probably know, if you follow what goes on in the state, a few years ago, the state concluded a lengthy and intensive effort to figure out how to adequately fund K-12 education and created a formula that was adequacy-based. And so there was a lot of interest in the Board of Higher Ed, in the legislature, and across advocacy groups for education at all levels to see if there could be an adequacy-based formula developed for higher ed. And that's a very bold goal, because at the time in 2021, when the commission was made, there was no adequacy-based formula used in higher ed anywhere in the country. About 2 months ago, one of the Texas community college districts came out with an adequacy-based funding formula. But really, most of the funding formulas that are used for higher ed are performance-based or outcomes-based or based on something enrollment-based, based on something other than adequacy. So the approach that was used by the Public Funding Commission was to look at content from around the country, look at what other states are doing, hear from experts in the field, and then ultimately use the feedback they got from within the state of Illinois and without to model a funding formula and craft recommendations that will be coming out in a report that's due to the General Assembly on July 1st. And that's a statutorily established deadline. So there will be a report on July 1st. I will say they broke the group, they broke the funding commission into three work groups and then added some expertise to those work groups. So there's been a work group based on adequacy, a work group based on resources, and a work group called the technical modeling work group. And I'm really proud of the fact that NIU is well represented on the commission and on the work groups. In fact, we might be the best represented university in the state. All of the 12 public university presidents and chancellors are members of the Public Funding Commission, along with some politicians, some members of advocacy groups. And then there's a consulting firm that's helping us that meets when we're convened. In addition to me, Simone Weffer-Alianzo, a faculty member from the College of Liberal Arts and Sciences, I guess now an associate dean from the College of Arts and Sciences, was selected statewide by the union to represent faculty. So he is the statewide representative for faculty on the funding commission. He and I worked together on the adequacy work group. He was also appointed to the resources and technical modeling work group, or at least definitely the technical modeling work group. Then when they formed the technical modeling work group, I suggested that Provost Ingram, because of her background as an economist and her incredible knowledge of higher ed funding, be the representative for NIU in the technical modeling work group. And that was accepted. And then they called me back again and said, can Andrew Rogers, our budget director, also please serve on the technical modeling work group, because he's well known because of the work that he did when he was in Oregon on their board. So NIU is really well represented. That doesn't mean that we'll get what we want. And it doesn't mean that the report is going to have an easy outcome. So I'm on the next slide, I'm just going to very briefly walk you through what we know the model is going to be, but we have at this point in time really no idea how this model will be translated into a funding formula. And the IBHE website under Work in Progress does have links to all the commission, PowerPoints, et cetera. These are public, so you can go and track the progress. But Pat will distribute this PowerPoint to everybody, but I think I can summarize this really quickly. If you look at the blue bar, it is labeled components. And this is what the commission believes stack up to be the components of adequate funding. The dark blue boxes represent instructional and non-instructional student services. So basically academic and non-academic support services for students. Core instructional program costs, academic advising, curricular design, career services, outreach, recruitment, admissions, retention, the things that are generally in enrollment management, in academic affairs, in student affairs. The bar below it, that sort of medium blue with white print, is a nod to our research and public service missions. And the statement there is that a lot of this is externally or separately funded, but it is inseparable from instructional adequacy and equity. And there is some requirement for this to happen at every university. And so it will be somehow represented in the adequacy bars. And then the very bottom line, that little blue bar, is operations and maintenance. And it's operations and maintenance on an annual basis, the capital investment for either new construction or the deferred maintenance backlog is not going to be put in the formula. It'll be handled separately in a capital process. So those are pretty much everything that people think goes into adequacy. And I don't think this part is particularly controversial. I think most things you could name, we could say, have been considered in one of those boxes. As you move to the orange bars, the orange bars basically say in this model that there are costs associated with all of these things that are in blue. There are costs to support recruitment, outreach, admissions, enrollment activities, costs for high impact academic supports, costs for instructional programs, et cetera. And then figuring out what those costs are and how they go in the formula is one of the first big challenges that I think is still being struggled with. Then if you look at the green box is really the box that talks about equity in the sense of to be equitable, you need to meet students where they are. There's a robust literature that suggests students who are first in their families to go to college, students who come from low-income backgrounds, students whose parents don't have professional jobs or networks, students who come from marginalized communities. All of those students need more support, and it costs more to make sure that they can succeed in higher education, not because they're different in their talent, but because they've been underserved before they've come to the university. And so there has to be some type of multiplier built into the formula that reflects the students who are at each university. So students, it goes to that equitable distribution formula that the IBHE recommended. If you serve a large student body that is in a group that needs more support, you should get more money to do that. So this is the theoretical depiction of where the model is going. I think that it's very unclear what's going to come out. The legislation itself said that all of the university's budgets would be held harmless. So nobody's going to lose money to have money given to another university from the existing appropriations. The formula will only go to new money. That's the way the K-12 formula was largely done also. But I think that there are just more questions than there are answers as to what the formula is going to look like and what's the report's going to say. Now, when the report is issued, it doesn't automatically go into law. The report is issued to the General Assembly. The General Assembly will debate it, and then there will be a lot more advocacy and lobbying from all of the universities, advocacy groups, et cetera, about where it goes. So this is important. It's something that we're watching very carefully. It's something that we've been involved in. And it's something where we may be coming to the members of the university community at a certain point after the recommendations are released and gathering feedback from you and asking you to advocate for the university and the students. So that was very complicated, but I think very important. And I'm just going to ask, I thought I saw Andrew walk in, and I know Beth is here. If anybody wants to say, I think Andrew's like hiding behind Dean Castle. If either of you wants to say anything before we move on to the NIU budget update. All right, great. In that case, Pat, we're going to move on to the NIU budget update. And next slide. What I really wanted to talk about was the progress that we're making in meeting the objectives we set forth last year in University Goal 6A, which was related to our multi-year planning and budget process. And we were very specific about what we wanted to do, but we also knew as we were making our objectives known that we would be onboarding a new CFO and that the new CFO was going to play a very important role in prioritizing the steps that needed to be taken and also setting the timelines. And so I just want to go over a little bit from my perspective where I think we are, and then again ask the leaders in the room that I mentioned previously to weigh in, and then open it for questions. So if you look at the first bullet, we promised we would continue to do quarterly updates to the Board of Trustees, and we did institute a new format this year, very, very much with Andrew Rogers' expertise and help, to start distinguishing recurring from one-time revenues and expenses in the way we express the quarterly budgets. We've introduced that. We've going to have gone through all of fiscal year 23 displaying our budgets in that format. We don't think that the format is exactly perfect yet. We have a couple of terminology issues to work out. We haven't quite figured out how to express grants and contracts the most appropriate way, but it's been a really important change in helping folks understand the difference between one-time and recurring revenues and expenses in the budget. And so we're going to continue to evolve that, and as fiscal year 23 before it starts, we'll probably see a slightly tweaked version of the format that we've been using. But Andrew did an amazing amount of work to get us to that point. Lots of conversations internally and with the Board of Trustees, and I want to recognize him for that effort. Then George is sitting next to me, and I couldn't be happier about that. One of our goals was to hire and onboard a CFO, Vice President for Administration and Finance, and we did that. And George has been engaging with the campus, developing and implementing our budget planning process, talking to people about his philosophy, and just getting the knowledge that he needs and will continue to need to know which steps we can take when, how fast, and what's going to be the most effective and the least disruptive to our operations. We also waited until George was here to release the administration's response, the leadership's response to the report from the budget and planning workshop. And Pat, if you could hit that hyperlink that says President's webpage. You may remember that they delivered their report in the fall. And I was hearing at that time concern, would we pay attention to the report? Would the arrival of a new CFO just cause us to do everything differently? I tried to reassure the campus community that, you know, we were all moving forward with these recommendations and that the momentum would not stop. And in about November, we had Dr. Blasey make a presentation to the Tuesday Monthly Leadership Group that's posted on the president's website at that link. Yeah, you did. So you can see right now, if you go under University Goals and Priorities off of the president's webpage, we have a new landing page for resource development and fiscal responsibility. And right now on that webpage, we have the presentation that Dr. Blasey made to the Budget and Planning Resource Group in November, from the Budget and Planning Resource Group to Tuesday Leadership in November. We have the full report from that group, and we have a letter from Vice President Middlemiss, Executive Vice President and Provost Ingram, and I talking about our reaction to the report, how we've embraced the recommendations, what we think we could do when. And Pat, if you could just maybe click on that first bullet where it says NIU leadership, I'll just show them what that looks like. Yeah, it's basically a dear colleague letter. It acknowledges the priorities set forth in that report. If you could scroll down. It states that we embrace their recommendations. Many were incorporated into the university goals. And then if you scroll down, you can just scroll pretty quickly. It talks about what we plan to do for realizing each of the recommendations and where we think that we might do something slightly different than what was recommended. That's sort of explained also. In addition to the update that's there, and I hope you'll all go visit it, and this will be a place where we continue to post updates on what's going on with our budget and planning process for the university community to see. I want to call out the fact that George has been talking to various shared governance groups on campus and shared leadership groups on campus about what he thinks is reasonable to meet the goals put out in the report. He's committed to having a budget process and timeline, not for fiscal year 24, but for fiscal year 25, shared with the community by October of 2023, and a budget education program being piloted by December of 2023. And I think that that's very realistic. In the budget and planning work group report, they recommended continuing to invest some of our funds in innovation. We committed to repeating an innovation pitch. The first one we did was based around investing in things that generate resources. This year's innovation initiative was launched in the form of a new curricular innovation grant programs. I understand that the award letters from that competition are going out in mid-April, but I think Provost Ingram could even give us a little more of an update. So Pat, if you could just go to the last slide. The last slide is really another opportunity just for me to recognize Drs. Blasey, Edgehill, Walden, and Brinkman for the work they did listening to campus and developing the budget and planning work group report. And I'd like to give them, but before them, George and Beth, an opportunity to to add to anything I said about the report, how we're going to move forward, an update on the curricular innovation program, and then we'll hear from the BPG and then obviously from the rest of UC if you have questions.
So thank you, Dr. Freeman. Many of you have heard from me. I don't think I've deviated much in the groups that I've met with, and I have got a few more on, I think one tomorrow. So, the budgets are complicated, and so it can seem really overwhelming as you're trying to work through a budget deficit, work through a planning process, all of those things. So my approach is just the same as I think I've shared with the leadership on more than one occasion. Being from Colorado, I make it sound like I did this a lot, but I've only done it like once. When you climb a 14er, you don't focus at the peak, you focus at the rock in front of you when you get to about 12,000 feet, because if you focus at the peak, you'll never make it. But you focus at the rock that's 10 feet in front of you, and you get to that rock and you celebrate that accomplishment and you go to the next rock. And before you know it, you're at the top of the peak taking your picture with your kids and saying you'll never do this again. So, and that would be with the budget rebuild process too. We're going to take it one day at a time. I'm excited to have the report. It becomes our guiding, kind of our guidepost. And I agree with Dr. Freeman. I think that the kind of the goals we've set for ourselves, the timeline we've set for ourselves, are realistic. We're not going to be perfect when we get to October for a budget process, and we're not going to be perfect with training. But we'll be able with both of those to begin the process of being a lot more disciplined in how we do our budgeting, which is my ultimate goal, is really being mindful of the resources that we have and strategic with them. But we've got a lot of work to do, and I think one of the biggest pieces in front of us is really getting our hands around how we manage this deficit to get it back to a balanced budget, and what the timeline is for that, because it's really about the resources that we have here today, and I have a sense of urgency to get that addressed, because that leads to NIU's future, which is so very important, not just to this community, but to Illinois. We serve a population of students that may not have an opportunity to further their lives. And so this institution cannot fail. And I feel a great responsibility to ensure that we don't.
Provost Ingram.
I'll just stand here, that's fine. So, as we're thinking about the budget, one of the things that President Freeman has always said is that we need to grow for the future too. So we can't just keep looking backwards. We've got to look to the future and what we can do to enhance the educational experience of our students, grow revenue, and make NIU better. And curricular innovation has been a part of our goals for a year now, and it's a goal for this year. And the university goal this year was to create a process to do a grant program to faculty and staff if they were interested for curricular innovation. And we were supposed to create a process, have that process in place this summer and do something next year. And when President Freeman and I developed that goal, I went to Jason Rohde and I said, well, could we do something this year? Do we need to wait? And he said, no, I'll get my team together and we'll go down that road. And so he created a pilot program this year of something that may be a bigger program next year. We put out a call for proposals in February, asking for faculty who might be interested in adopting virtual reality in their courses or artificial intelligence or working across disciplinary lines to create a new kind of course, anything that was innovative and might enhance the experience of our students. We did it very quickly. I shouldn't say we, Jason and his team did it very quickly. And we got 48 applications, which was amazing. And I think is a true testament to the creativeness and innovation of our faculty. Right, who had to put those proposals together on a really short timeline. The proposals are being reviewed by a faculty committee, and we had initially decided we would fund 10 of them. We're going to fund 20 because of the great response that we had from faculty. The grant is $5,000 to do the innovation, plus $500 in extra support if you need to buy software, if you need materials, if you need extra help. And so this summer we'll have 20 faculty, up to 20 faculty, working on really innovative things that are going to enhance the experience of our student across, I wrote this down, it was 29 different departments. 29 different departments. So I'm really excited. President Freeman actually hasn't seen the proposals yet because we're kind of waiting to put them into a good form for her, but they're really exciting. And so we will be announcing the grant recipients in mid to late April, and then we'll put out some information so everybody can see what great things are going on campus. So I'm really excited.
Thank you for the chance.
Thank you. I know I want to get to questions from UC and we want to keep moving, but you know, Dr. Blasey and Vice President Edgehill Walden and Dean Brinkman, we've been working on this together for a long time. And I would just, if one of you or all of you just want to share, you know, your thoughts and expectations about the process, where we are and where we're going.
Yeah, thank you, President Freeman. Vice President Middlemist, I really like your comparison of this to rock climbing, because it was a slog and we really did have to keep our head down and keep focused over what I think was almost a year, long effort. And I'd like to thank Drs. Edgehill-Walton and Brinkman for all the effort that they and I put together and getting this these recommendations together. It wasn't mentioned here, but I want to point out that it really was everybody's work, because we reached out to as many communities, many stakeholders as we possibly could to understand what the aspirations and what the concerns were over our budget process. And I know we talked to many of you in here and across the campus, and it really, our focus really was on improving the process going towards a multi-year budget, increasing the what I call the financial literacy of the community, so we could all participate in the conversation around our budget and our finances. And I'm really gratified to see that, and I believe I can speak for my colleagues, that the administration, the president, the provost, and the VP have accepted those recommendations. So I guess my main comment is it really represents a consensus of the entire university.
All right, we have thumbs up from the other two members of the group who are here. Questions from UC? Dallas has a question.
Hi, everybody. Dallas Douglas, Student Government Association. I had a question about something that you mentioned much earlier in your presentation, Dr. Freeman, so apologies, but you were talking about the capital funding coming in for infrastructure. And I seem to recall a few months ago a conversation that we had where John Heckman was talking about how capital funding was going towards new projects rather than deferred maintenance or current infrastructure. Is that incorrect? Can I get more info about that somewhere?
There is capital funding going towards both. And John has a system, you know, there's new construction, but then he has two different categories for what's a little bit of a remodel and what's a big restoration. And I can't remember off the top of my head the terms he uses for those, but there's actually money going in all three directions. I don't know, Provost Ingram, you go to the capital planning meetings. Do you have anything to add? Microphone.
The only thing I would add is, and I think you're aware of this because you were on the student fee committee, we did set aside some money in the student fee process to do some renovations on classrooms this summer, and that process is moving forward. And George has also found some additional money to do some really necessary technology upgrades in some of the lecture halls where the technology is not up to par. And so that would be in the category of smaller things. I realize they're big things to
like
the students.
The boilers and the roofs but the are boilers. The big thing.
Yeah. But I think those are really important, that we are investing this summer in technology and upgrades, paint, better equipment in classrooms, due to the support of you and the other students in bringing those issues to our attention.
All right, thank you, Dr. Ingram. Yeah, just want to make sure that I'm representing the students. We hear a lot of concerns about infrastructure and buildings. So that's great to hear. I'd love to hear more about the pocket that you found for more renovation. That'd be interesting to hear. And I'll contact John as well to see.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Thanks.
Nice, huh? Okay. Sorry, I'm not a member. Can I ask a question, Ismail? Sure. I know, I have to ask permission, right? Okay. Can you talk a little bit about how faculty research is going to be configured into the adequacy funding model? It may have been on that first blue column, but I couldn't see it in the back because I'm old.
No, Linda, I think you ask a very critical question. You know, at the start of the process, I think all of the public university presidents agreed that there were three things that needed to be reflected in the formula. That is size, because, you know, your headcount actually does matter. If you have 15,000 students, you need more money than if you have 1,500. On the other hand, if you have 1,500 students, you probably don't get quite the economy of scale you get at 15,000. So size would matter. Then I think the type of students you have matters, and that's the equity piece we've talked of. And then the third component that all of the university presidents agree on is that mission matters. And I think that when I say mission matters, I'm fighting with everything that I have for our distinctive identity as a research university, a high research activity university that offers the opportunity to create knowledge to students who are from historically and currently underserved communities. And I do not want to see our mission get lost in this formula. I think that there was appreciation on the commission for the distinct missions of the university, but I don't think that there was universal understanding of how that translates not only into resource needs, but into resources that the universities have. So there was a lot of time spent trying to educate people who don't run universities or work at universities about what external funding for research doesn't cover, what indirect costs can and cannot be used for, and how inadequate they are to really reimburse us for our existing research costs. That's the former VPR and Meek talking. But making sure that that essential piece of research funding, I don't want to see this end up with a commission's recommending a formula that leaves the U of I system as the only research university in the state, because SIU and NIU and ISU do important work, as do some of the non-high and very high research activity universities. And so I think there's like a big question about how that mission piece is going to be built into any kind of funding formula. And when we see that, I think we'll know what arguments we need to make to protect NIU and make sure that we continue to do what we do so well. And in our advocacy this spring and in our meeting with the governor yesterday, I tried to emphasize that point over and over and over again. So I share your concerns that drove that question. I don't really have an answer to your question.
Can I ask a question that's not really?
Yeah.
Okay. The Mental Health Act, can you talk about where we are in terms of that funding? I heard there was an early release of funding to help with the...
I don't actually have an update on that.
Okay.
I will get Katie or Matt to give the gritty details to Pat so that she can share them with University Council. Great. All right, Ismail, I think we can move on. And I'm sorry I took so long, but I think it was a good update, right? And it was a good conversation. So thank you all.
Okay, so we will move on to item Roman numeral 8, report from councils, boards, and standing committees. Item 8A, Faculty Advisory Council to IBHE, And we have Linda Saborio, who is going to give report. So Linda, welcome back. The floor is yours.
Okay. I guess I was in here. So for our March meeting of the FAC, we met at Chicago State University. I was just checking online. It looks like, are they still on strike? Let me tell you, I do appreciate the administration's response at my university to the needs of the faculty and the shared governance, right? And the transparency that we have between faculty and administration. Thank you very much for that. So the March meeting at Chicago State University, we met with the president and vice provost, had a great conversation with them, asked about their advising system, civic engagement, community involvement with the campus, and much more. We had a presentation on the Rise Academy community, and I have those slides if you're interested in seeing them. And then we had another presentation on mental health and academia. And I learned to say, not now. So I think I might have a t-shirt. I would thought about having a t-shirt made that says not now, but some might take that the wrong way. So Katie have one made for her too. This is not now. Okay. The FAC chair also shared with us the Student Advisory Council resolution that was presented at the last IBH meeting at Malcolm X College in Chicago. If you're interested in seeing that, isn't that posted on the IBHE website? I think it is. It's a great resolution if you're interested in reading that. Okay. And then I have two items that are, I don't know if Pat's going to pull them up here or not, but that were posted to the Faculty Senate FAC webpage. One is from our Early College Credit Working Group, and it's aimed at high school students, parents, counselors, and more information about what to consider when it comes to early college credit. More of an informative document there. And it's to foster awareness of the potential benefits and drawbacks associated with taking early college courses. And then we have another item, which is a collection of tools and resources for faculty, administrators, staff, and more to support their ongoing DEI initiatives. A lot of information on this page. It was presented by Julie, who's in our DEI working group at the last IBH meeting, was well received. A lot of different sites there you can click on. Be careful, it's more like a rabbit hole, I've been told, right? Information. And I think that's it. In April, they're sending me out to Western Illinois University, so I may have some more stories to add to my travel adventures around the state of Illinois. Yes, thank you very much. And also, well, I just received one more thing quick, an email from Stephanie at IBHE regarding some proposed changes to administrative rules for Sarah and nursing grants. Do you know anything about that? So just recently shared with me. No, it's too new, huh? Fresh off the press. Okay. If I can find it here, let me look. Proposed changes to administrative rules for Sarah and nursing grants. And it says that at the March meeting of the IBHE, they voted to advance through the state's rulemaking process changes to several sets of administrative rules as outlined below. And there's a summary of the proposed changes. If you're interested, I can forward this to anyone. There's a long list of different changes they're proposing here. So, okay. And that concludes my report. Are there any questions? Rather convoluted today, sorry. Okay.
Questions for Linda? Great, thank you. We'll move on to item 8B. University Advisory Council to the Board of Trustees, members of which include Felicia Bohannon, Holly Nicholson, Katie Jekyll, Karen Whitby, Brad Cribe, and myself. So I'm gonna very quickly kind of give some highlights, and we'll invite my colleagues who are present to add anything that they may like. So as many of you probably know, the March 23rd BOT meeting was rescheduled due to the expiration of the terms of four members of the trustees. But this past Monday, April 3rd, the board reconvened and kickstarted the meeting with an off-cycle election of officers for fiscal year 2023. As a result of that election, Eric Wazovic is now the new chair of the board. Dennis Bersima, the vice chair, while former chair Montel Gales retained his seat on the board, and Rita Athas will continue as a board member. As for the meeting itself, its agenda comprised mainly three different kind of items. The first two items were reports and university recommendations from the board committees, many of which were forwarded from previous sessions for the board approval. So I'm not going to go into details to that, but what I'm going to focus on would be the third part that included the six action items directly from President's report. These included university recommendation for the trustees to approve a four-year agreement with NIU Tenure and Tenure Track Unit, United Faculty Alliance, Local 4100 of the University Professionals of Illinois, representing approximately 532 employees in the Division of Academic Affairs. This agreement is retroactively effective from July 1st, 2022 through June 30th, 2026. United Faculty Alliance President, Dr. Kerry Ferris from the Department of Sociology was present along with a number of the union members to express their support and encourage the trustees to approve this agreement. Trustees themselves, I mean, many of whom expressed supportive sentiment while driving that morning to NIU and listening to news that were happening elsewhere, Governor State, and expressed their support. And so we also want to thank the senior administration, the university, for working to make NIU at this point in time a model and an envy for many of our peer institutions. The second action item was the university recommendation for the board approval of Dean for the College of Health and Human Science. Dr. Freeman already kind of mentioned that. So that hire followed a national search that culminated in the hiring of Dr. Haley Fiala, who accepted an offer to be the Dean of the College of Health and Human Science. And Dr. Fiala is recommended for appointment at the rank of professor with tenure in the School of Interdisciplinary Health Professionals in the College of Health and Human Sciences. And after postponing a vote affecting law student tuition and fees from the previous board meeting, the trustees approved the university recommendation to increase fee cost to cover the cost of operation, probably part of what Provost Ingram kind of mentioned in terms of capital project. As a result, law student will see increase in health and wellness charge by 25%, university advancement fee for capital improvement charges and transportation access by 45 and 70 cents respectively. Law excellence charge will increase by $40 while tuition will remain the same, seeing a zero increase. The other three action items revolve around the sale of real estate property the board previously determined as surplus to the university need and authorized to be sold under updated provision of the Illinois Property Control Act 30 ILCS 605. A reasonable offer for a lease to purchase arrangement has been tentatively developed with the DeKalb Community Unit District 428, and the approach has been approved at the board meeting held March 7, 2023. And the university recommended that the Board of Trustees approve this. The last action item presented the university recommendation of the Board of Trustees to approve fiscal year 2024 master agreement facility contract renewal. And lastly, a non-action item was an overview presentation from Dean Bob Brickman of the College of Liberal Arts and Science, who gave an overview presentation of various workings of the CLAS. And one of the highlights of his presentation was the college implementation of the 8-week courses that has been deemed as very, very successful. And we had the student trustees, in fact, who himself had taken that and gave a very good testimony to utility of this course that is making significant difference in terms of student graduation and also helping students overcome other issues and barriers. So at this point, I want to ask my colleagues on the if they have anything they would like to add. I can see Holly, please.
Just a quick clarification. So because Trustee Wasowitz and Trustee Athis terms expired and they were reappointed, they had to do an election, but they remained chair and vice chair. There'll be another election later in the summer. And I was really excited about those courses as well. And just another detail, it's for students who are DFW, which is an acronym I learned, mm-hmm. They're struggling with their grade. And so they have this 8-week condensed course for an opportunity for a second chance for that course. So it's improved that DFW rate.
Right. Any other BOT to UAC member would like to add anything? Well, if not, minute of the BOT meetings can be accessed using the link provided in your agenda packet. And the next BOT meeting will be held May 11th. With that, we will move on to item 8C, and that would be Rules, Governance and Election Committee. We don't have report. Item 8D, Student Government Association. I see
Hi again, Dallas Douglas, Speaker of the Senate for the Student Government Association. Currently, the SGA is primarily focused on our elections. So our first election concluded last week. We had we filled our executive cabinet. We are looking for candidates for a special election because we did not meet quorum for our legislative branch. I'm on the Board of Elections, so just a little bit of info on that. We are having candidate meetings tomorrow and Friday. A paperwork deadline is next Wednesday, and the election will take place on Wednesday, April 19th. I do have election materials that I'll be providing. So hopefully if you could distribute those, I would greatly appreciate it. They are stamped by posters, so if you want to print versions and put them in your offices, that would be awesome. Speaker elections will also take place April 28th. I'm graduating this year, so I will not be reapplying for speaker. So I'll have more info on that at our next meeting. And then finally, as a funding update, the Finance Committee met this Monday to review close to 50 requests from student organizations for funding from our supplemental funding. Unfortunately, we were not able to fund all of them. We did have a lot of excess funding that we were able to access this year that's been monumentally helpful to student organizations. I have with me Chris English, who's an engineering student and the clerk of the Senate. I know that he's been instrumental in getting funding to engineering clubs, but it's not just those. We've been able to fund. I wish I had a number for you that if Treasurer Morgan was here, I could tell you, but a lot of student organizations really benefited this year from the Finance Committee's efficient distribution of funding. So we're looking forward to the next year. We wanted to express our condolences to the student orgs we weren't able to fund, but that's how it is. We do run out eventually. So, yep, just elections and funding. Any questions? Chris, do you want to add something?
This is more a statement. It was almost $100,000 was funded for supplemental. I think it's a little bit under, but almost $100,000.
There you have it. Questions? All right, thank you.
Okay, item 8E, operating staff council, Harley Nicholson, no report. Supportive professional staff council, Alicia Bohannon.
Just really short, we're accepting nominations for the SPSSC council at this time, and Friday is actually the deadline.
So the last agenda item is item 9, information items. They just what they are. The only thing of note would be 9Q indicating the date for next university council meeting, which will be May 3rd. And with that, I would like to entertain a motion to adjourn. I have Holly second. All in favor? Aye. Okay, thank you. Meeting is adjourned.